What's happening, everyone? And welcome back to another episode of the Beautiful Hustle Podcast, the podcast that connects the heart to the hustle of the beauty industry. I am with my beautiful co-host, Jessica Saunders.
Hello, my tan beach boy, Philip Procopio.
I'm so tan and it feels so good.
I bet it feels so good. Tell everyone what you just did.
I just went on the vacation of a lifetime. It was honestly the best vacation I've ever had.
I am so jealous. You didn't post much because you were having that much fun.
I wanted to post some because everyone was like, post. And I'm not like the vlogger type though on my social media. And it was a lot of fun. We did so much. There was a lot of downtime as well. I'm one of those vacationers though, that like, I like some things planned, and then especially a vacation like this, I like to just like sit there.
Yeah.
Cause I don't just like sit there and do nothing ever.
Yeah.
And with the view I had, I didn't even say where I was.
Yeah.
I was in St. Croix in the US Virgin Islands in the Caribbean.
Everyone asked me like, where's Phil? I'm like, he's in La Croix.
So I was in La Croix, or also known as St. Croix, part of the U.S. Virgin territory. It was the most beautiful place I've ever been.
It's awesome.
It was really incredible. And the best thing was we decided to go there because it's not quite as touristy and developed. I mean, it's very touristy because it's an incredible place on the planet, but it definitely was not like as much as like the Bahamas.
Sure.
So it was still, and they had, we found out there was a hurricane there. I think it was like Hurricane Maria. It was a big one that hit Florida, like the whole Caribbean, just decimated the whole island. And, so it was, and we wanted to go cause we thought about going to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And the fires just recently happened, and there's a lot of controversy around tourism in Hawaii anyway. Yeah. So we want to choose some place that like welcome tourists abundantly and with open arms and
sure. Still
beautiful. And so it was incredible. It was very much like a big luxury vacation. I feel like the luckiest boy on the planet to be able to have done this.
So Philip has a good friend, April. Mm-hmm. And April and I are twin flames.
Yes.
And when they were booking this and planning this, April kept having ideas. And I was like, oh my God, what a good idea. And Phil's like, how much is it? Is it safe? Can we get a copy of the release contract?
Well, originally April and I had been talking about going on a vacation. And so I went to where I was in like a 6 week stint of traveling every weekend. And one of those weeks I was just exhausted, tired, lot of just crazy travel. And so I went to her and I was like, listen, I need you to be a good friend and book this vacation. I don't care where, I don't care how much, I don't care what we do. I just need
book it.
A beach and just relax. And so she's like, okay. And that was my first mistake. By saying, I don't care how much, because her and I are also in very different tax brackets, I'm finding out. And so, but it was incredible. And I mean, we got to do everything.
I think the highlights were when she hired a private chef and a private boat.
Oh my God, which were honestly the best parts, obviously.
I know, that's why April and I are totally twin flames.
Yes.
Did you do any flirting?
No. Okay. I mean, listen, here's the thing. So this is the other side of the coin on this trip. It was hilarious. I don't think I posted a whole lot about this, but it ended up being like a family vacation because we invited a couple other friends who couldn't make it. And one of the original things I went to was like, I don't want kids around. And I meant like five-year-olds.
Like my children.
Yeah. Well, not...
I don't want my children on vacation.
Well, either. I didn't want like, because we talked about a resort. So I didn't want like a lazy river full of five-year-olds screaming.
Yeah.
And so we ended up renting a house and we took her two kids, who are 16 and 17. Very close with them.
Lovely people.
Amazing kids. They, especially in today's world, especially hairstylists out there, you know, teenagers these days.
Yeah. These are not those.
These are not them. They invited two friends as well. So it was me, April, and four teenagers. And people kept saying like, oh, mom and dad, we would just laugh. And so it was,
Your kids kind of do like, they look like they could be your kids.
At first I was like, I'm not old enough. And then I quickly realized I am very much old enough, not even by a little. And so, although I turned to April at one point and I was like, you know, I really wish my dad was alive right now.
Really?
And she was like, oh, and I was like, so I could apologize to how effing terrible of a teenager I was, because I get it. As amazing as these kids are, they're teenagers.
Yeah.
And that's universally, generationally annoying. And it was fun.
I'm glad.
Yeah. And the private chef you mentioned was so fine. I was a fine ass black man, I'm telling you.
Oh, you sent pictures and I'm like, he is in heaven.
It was great. And then the boat, we went snorkeling, which I almost, well, I didn't almost die, but
felt like
I was going to. It was kind of rough. And the boat guy was, he's a huge snorkeler. He like deep sea dives, like insane. And the water was getting a little rough and he's like, oh, we'll be fine. And he's like, you have nothing to worry about if you're with me. And I trusted him. So we get out to this one spot and it's just him and I going, cause the kids had gone in another spot. And so this was like the big goal that I wanted to do. I bought a specific underwater phone case so that I could get some cool shots. Immediately regretted once I dove in. A fin broke and I'm like, it was struggle for my life. I'm trying to get these videos.
All you see is bubbles.
So I'm like, I found this fish and I'm like, calm water, let me get this. All of a sudden a huge wave, I get slammed against the coral. I'm upside down. At one point I'm like, I think my feet are out of the water, but my head's on the floor. It was, and then I come out of, this is like 5 minutes into, and I get out of the water and I'm like, I think I gotta go back. And he's like, already? And I'm like, bitch, look at me. Do I look like I've worked out in the last 2 years? So, but other than that, it was amazing.
Well, I have a surprise for you, a welcome home present.
What's that? Oh, dear God. Oh, my God. Okay.
Those of you who are exclusively listening on audio, I am showing Philip my new phone that is activated. This phone has been sitting in a box.
And charged.
And charged. I'm a new woman, Phil.
Look at this. Brand new iPhone. How long have you had this in your possession?
Since March of last year.
She constantly is like, you take the picture because your phone works better. Or her phone's dead.
Dead 90% of the time.
Yeah.
But a year, almost a year later, 1 month shy of a year later, I activated my new phone and I'm using it.
That is actually wild.
Yes.
But I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Good job.
That feels good to hear, and I'm proud of you from you. All right, let's talk salon stuff, leadership. Yeah. So there's this subject, especially leaning into the new year, that I feel like it's important to talk about is the role motivation plays in achievement. Like how much of it is motivation and how much of it is being consistent, having accountability, the like less pleasant parts. Because I feel like so many people are like, I'm not motivated. I need more motivation. And they spend hours on Instagram, Pinterest, all these things like seeking motivation when it is such a short burnt out fuse that it's actually what you need is practice for it to become consistent and easy. I think people need to start shifting the word motivation towards like, I need more practice so that this is no longer a hard thing for me. An analogy someone gave me once that like totally clicked in my brain was driving. The first time you drive, you like get in the car, you move your seat, you put your seatbelt on, you move the steering wheel, you change it, you do all the things, check the mirrors, and you back out like a snail and you're scared and you're looking around. Now I don't even look behind me. It's your luck. If you're behind me, I will squish you.
And I can attest that is exactly how she drives.
Not changing any mirrors. Like we're just going down the road. And it's the difference between like your practice at driving. I'm now comfortable driving.
Yeah.
And I don't need motivation to do something differently. I need practice for it to not have that resistance to feel so tough. Like what are what is your relationship or perspective in regards to leadership in the role motivation plays?
Well, one thing I think about when I hear the word motivation, and this is funny because we just did an episode on recruiting and we said this is like the recruiting is the number one topic we get asked when we're out in the field. The other thing I get a lot of from owners and managers is motivation to just show up some days. And totally normal. That's just life. We go through these ebbs and flows of motivation and consistency and practice and all those things. Especially if your business has been around a long time, you'll know, like, there are years periods sometimes.
Absolutely.
Where you have no motivation. And that's where one of the reasons we started this podcast was having good systems and having good practices within your business can allow managers and owners to be able to take a step back sometimes and say, I just don't have the motivation. We also do need to have that grace for our employees then when they're going through periods where they just want to show up, do the job and go home and not be motivated to do anything beyond that.
I totally agree. And what I love is that you called out that, like, the systems are in place for mm-hmm. this to happen. We're not letting it go to hell in a handbag during this lack of motivation time frame. You have systems and well-oiled machines that work, that keep you accountable, that mm-hmm. keep the business moving. So when motivation is low, mm-hmm. it doesn't derail the business. And those time frames you have, you don't have to spend so much time cleaning up from.
Well, a lot of people, I've seen many owners, and I've been one of them. You know, I mean, you were very similar, and we just do it all. And we'll just do it because I'm like, I'm single, I have no kids, I'm available, I'll just do it all. And then I leave for vacation and I'm panicked the whole time because I'm like, I know I'm just going to come back and everything's going to be a disaster. But you know, in the last several years, being able to set up great systems allows me to fully relax. Like, this last vacation, I didn't think about anything of work once.
Yeah.
And it's nice because then I don't need the motivation to come back and get into it and get back into the routine, because I already know the routine's there, the system's there. I can just, like, sail back into the routine of things that are already consistent and things are going great.
I agree. I think motivation can be great for sparking change mm-hmm. or, like, sparking ideas. Some of that daydreaming. Once you get excited about something, then you're motivated to explore your business in a different way.
Yeah.
But as soon as that motivation fizzles out, it will always fall back onto what systems you have in place mm-hmm. and how well practiced you are in executing them.
And I think one of the things that is a big indicator of how well your system's set up and how well are you at adapting to practicing whatever it is if you've gone to a conference, if you've gone to a show, if you've gone to anything of the sort, a class, and you leave and you are hyped and you have all these pages and pages of notes and ideas and things like that. And then you get home and you get back into the daily grind and nothing changes.
Business as usual.
And it happens. And I do it all the time. And conferences and classes, it's an atmosphere built to inspire and hype people up to do
for
that.
Sure.
And then you get back in the daily grind and you get first day back, Aveda Care is down, you can't place an order, but you're out of 20 volume within 24 hours. And then three people have called off because they got sick while traveling with you. And it just all goes to the side. And that's life. That happens. But one of the things years ago we had kind of put in practice our management team was when we got back, we would debrief a few days later and then start, okay, what are we going to implement? What was just, like, the hype while we're there and just fun versus what can we take this? Because everything sounds amazing.
Totally.
Anyone who runs over $1 million business can give you their ideas and you're like, that sounds great. That sounds great. And then you get back and you're like, all right, but here are my systems. How can I implement this? What can I implement? That may not work for my team. That may not work for my lifestyle. So here's what I can. And usually to get the motivation to do it, it's there. I can't remember where I heard this, but I was at a conference one time and they were talking about trust. And this person was talking about someone in the audience was like, how do I begin to trust when I've been burned so much by employees or by personal relationships? How do I begin to trust? And this guy looked at this girl and he goes, you just trust. There is no buildup. There is no pre-work to trust. You just have to trust. Mm-hmm. Now you can have backups in place for when something does go awry, but you just have to trust. And I think it's the same thing with motivation. How do you get started from for change, for motivate, from conferences and things like that? you just have to do it. You just have to sometimes dive in. And first thing is analyze and assess what will work for my business.
Yeah. And that conference I just got back from last week, one of the big subjects was, how do you build trust amongst a team? Like, what, how do you do that? And it was a similar concept in that, like, you have to show up and give everyone a blank slate at the beginning of their relationship. And then how you maintain and manage that trust in there, it's all a relationship. Because a lot of times with these owners where they feel like they've lost trust in somebody because of whatever history of situations has happened, almost always there's a misunderstanding somewhere in there. There's a disconnect somewhere in the relationship where they don't know the full experience of the employee side of it. They're making judgment based on their lens in it. And so right piggybacked next to trust, I would totally put with it, is the relationship is the trust. It's the ability to comfortably, safely express ourselves back and forth without judgment, without consequence. And it doesn't mean that everything you say is how it's going to go, but it's safe to at least express it and for us to negotiate where that lives in the future.
When I really do believe, when you hire someone, you're entering into a contract of trust. You are saying, you are welcome in my business, and I trust you that we are, and they do the same. Employees do the same, especially in today's world and in corporate world and service and the salons. There's so much toxic culture in all workplaces that when someone decides to work for you, because it's a two-way street, you decide to hire them, they decide to work for you. And they come in saying, all right, I'm going to trust that you are not going to be a toxic leader. And I, as the leader, am going to trust that you are going to be a contributing member to this team. And so again, just like with trust, the motivation to start doing, because I think that's when people say they have a hard time with motivation, it's really just code for, I don't know how to get started. And so sometimes it is just, you just have to do it. And I always say, it's like with any change, and I love change. I will rearrange my entire apartment once a month because I love change that month much. I've learned, having coworkers, that not everyone loves change that much. So I've had to rein it in. However, just one little thing, you just have to, like, just dip the toe in at least. And again, practice. When you get good at change, that's adaptability, because everything constantly is changing, especially in today's culture. Trends change so fast now in the hair world behind the chair. I mean, I remember when I first started, they said women's trends tend to last about 5 years. We are already,
I'm like, 5 months if you're lucky now.
Yeah, with social media, I mean,
it's just skyrocketed that time frame.
I'm developing some content for education about hair color trends in social media. And I was like, oh, maybe like once every 2 years I can change the content. And you were like, no, it has to be every 6 months. And I'm like, damn,
and
you're right.
And I am, even as, like, it's got to be as agile as at any point in time when something pops off, you can plug it in. Because it just changes that fast. Okay, two things I want to add to that. One, the first one that you said about sometimes the motivation isn't there and you just have to get started. I totally agree. And I think a big part of that is knowing yourself. Like, you know, you like the change. So you're really good about acknowledging that the beginning is fun and exciting for you. When it comes to the day-to-day repetition and the accountability of doing it over and over, that's where you lose your mojo for it. I am very strict. I'm like, what's the word? I am very, like,
particular.
And, like, I like things to be correct in a certain way, in a predictable pattern. I am less of the change it up. I am more of the, like, execution side of it. So for me, a lot of times the daydream feels overwhelming. The change feels unmotivating because it's so big. I'm like, what if I pick the wrong one? There's all these potential options. What if I grabbed the wrong one and put all this effort in and nothing, and it was the wrong choice?
And I'm always like, well, then we'll change it.
Yeah. And I am like, but I was so married and attached to the system in place that we executed with it. So I think it's important for you to know that about yourself. Yes. So like you and I have chosen to partner together and we've chosen responsibilities in things where you daydream these big picture things. I like fine tooth comb and micromanage. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for. Micromanage all the details. And that makes a great relationship. Yeah. So know yourself, be comfortable asking for feedback to understand like, where do I fall short in this, and surround yourself with people that support you on the other side of it, or know that that's your work. Yeah. Like I know for me, my work is always finding a big picture and the details will always be waiting for me to micromanage and to pick apart.
Absolutely. And this is why it is so important, especially for larger teams where you have a management team, to choose people who complete complete the circle of like how to operate efficiently and well and have great relationships. And I learned that from my previous management team, where every person was on there for a very specific reason on how to interact with the team, with the systems, with each other.
And Steph Fox just told us that on our conversation we had with her. And she's like, you don't just go hiring warm bodies that walk in the door.
Yeah.
Like, you know exactly what you're looking for. We are looking for somebody with this skill set, with this time frame, and you hold true to that.
Yeah. And for a long time, the people who were chosen for management, leadership, ownership were just the people who either had the best numbers or were the hardest, quote unquote, the hardest worker. And that's not how you should choose a leadership team. It should be like, even if you're just one manager, if you're the owner and you need to choose a manager, it should not be someone who just has the best numbers. A lot of times those people don't really, in my experience, have not wanted to be in leadership always.
Or it's not their greatest skill set. They are a me. They're an executor.
Yes.
And they execute greatly. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to being broad with it, they can't always evolve that skill set or don't want to.
Yeah. So really choosing a leader or manager within your company should be someone who completes a side of you or fills in an area where, not for lack of a better term, your weakness.
Totally.
You know, my current owner and I fight a lot in good jest. However, we make a great team also because we fight like that. And when I say fight, I mean, we're just
disagree.
Yeah. We're both just argumentative people and it just works for us. But she's not great with change. She doesn't know how to begin change sometimes. And so we make a great team. Cause I'm like, no, we're getting this done. Here's the date. We're going to have it done by. Here are your list of things to do pre this date. Yeah. And she's like, that's exactly what I need. Now, where it benefits me is once we've completed that, she is the follow through. She's like, here, okay, what is going on with this? How are we continuing? Let's check up on this.
Yeah.
Because my mind sometimes is on to the next thing that's going to change.
100%. The other piece of it that I want to acknowledge and bring out too is that as we're talking about this, your team is a direct reflection of your leadership.
Yes.
And so if you're seeing things in your team that you're not proud of, that you don't like, that is a direct reflection of not you particularly, but your leadership capabilities. And so that's where also looking at hiring somebody and bringing somebody in that has a different side of it can round out your team in a different way. And again, like going back to the motivation versus execution, somebody who is like me, who's really detail oriented, you need an inspiration person on your team. Yeah. So if you find your team is feeling very micromanaged, you've got a tight grip on them, which I would totally do if I had a team. I know I have to empower people and create systems in my business that allows creative freedom for them. Yeah. Otherwise, I might squash it with my system all the time. So I think the biggest thing with the motivation versus the execution is knowing yourself well enough and taking the time to self-explore and understand what parts of you thrive in motivation, what parts of you thrive in execution, where are the gaps, and who on your team can you collaborate with to make sure you're well-rounded?
Yeah, you said something that, and I'm going to say this, not shade to anyone. If you feel like this might be you, this is not meant to bring you down.
If it triggers you, it's true. Just kidding.
I mean, it could be a point of self-reflection. But the amount of times I'm out working with owners, managers, my own owners, myself, so often the things they complain about, I instantly see they do.
Yes.
Instantly. It is uncanny. It is just mind-boggling how many times someone says, well, dress code. My team's never in dress code.
And you look across the table and you're like,
there it is.
You know what? So I will often own that 100% too, because what I celebrate most about my director, Sarah, I'm like, she gives me full autonomy. She lets me manage my territory, run my own country, mm-hmm. how I want. She has never, ever, ever made me feel micromanaged. Mm. And I love that.
Yeah.
I would micromanage someone so hard. Like yeah. it's the opposite. Like I see the yeah. opposite in her, then I love it.
Yeah.
And so I could see how I could complain if someone micromanaged me mm-hmm. when that is exactly what I would do.
Oh, it was one of the biggest turning points in my leadership career is recognizing what I'm calling out. I better make damn sure that I have zero anything to take accountability for in that. And actually on this trip, the private chef and myself and April were talking with the kids, and one of the kids who, you know, teenagers, there's like, they don't like the boss, so they yeah. quit. And we were talking about how as an owner, a manager, a leader, you are so under the microscope and you get picked apart. And is it fair? No. Is it right? No. Is it how it is?
Is it true? It's gonna be.
Absolutely. No matter what. And I've talked about reviews where someone one time, I am very social at work. I will talk with anyone. And I got a review one time that I was like always off doing projects and never with anyone. And for a while I was just like not engaging with people. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go work in the break room and work in there a little bit so I can like work and be included with everyone.
Sure.
Next review, I work too much in the break room and don't pay attention. And I'm like, I cannot effing win. But everything I got called out for were things I would do. And so you have to like learn to do that self-reflection of like, okay, am I calling this out? Am I great at this? Nowadays, if I call out, you know, me and my towels.
Oh my God. The towels are your hill to die on.
I'm telling you. But, you know, so anytime, and I have those thoughts when I'm putting towels, I'm like, F it. I'm just going to throw these in. And I look and I'm like, fuck.
I've been so mean to everybody. I can't. Last thing I want to put on this subject and then we'll wrap up. I also call this out with stylists. If you want to call in sick, don't you dare ever complain when you have a no show or a late cancel. Because you want your books moved around back and forth, depending on your personal life, which I get it. Life happens, but then they're the first one to throw a fit and they want a no show charge and they want to be paid for it. When somebody calls in, a client calls in late and cancels.
Oh, and it's big on
the, you have ever canceled on a client, you don't get that.
Yeah.
Opinion anymore.
It's huge on social media right now because every stylist, rightfully so, is starting to have cancellation policies and fees and deposits and all these things. But I just saw a TikTok of a girl who was like, the stylist no-showed me.
Yeah.
And then yet would not give back the deposit. And it's a two-way street. And I am very rarely behind. I mean, very rarely do I run late. And very rarely do I move clients. Now that I'm traveling more, it happens a little more often. So I have to loosen up on my late policy and my no-show policy. Now, if someone's just like, I forgot, that's different. But I'm pretty lenient with those policies because I know I have to have a lot of leniency because I sometimes do expect, I'm like, hey, I just got booked a class across the country and I'm going to be gone for 3 days.
Yeah.
So I've got to move 3 days worth of clients.
But you're also good about, you'll come in on a weekend or a day off. You'll do right by your people.
That's the other thing. You got to do it right. No, yeah. I don't think I've lost any clients either because of that. And I know stylists who move things for valid reasons, but when it's consistently moving clients and then all of a sudden you have a lot of white space on your books,
yeah,
there's a reason.
It's you, babe.
Yep.
All right. Quick little recap about today, though. Just check yourself on your motivation. Understand. Mm-hmm. Do some self-discovery. See where you fall in the motivation to execution scale and create partnerships and relationships that are built on trust and that fill in your weak spaces. And if you need help with some of this self-discovery, reach out to myself and Philip. We'd love to do a coaching session for you. Yeah. We've done plenty of discovery calls with people who are just curious about, like, analyze my leadership, analyze where the role I play in my business, and help me see these weak spots that I'm not seeing.
Yeah.
It's a very hard conversation sometimes for them to have, but it is probably the number one conversation that will shift the culture of your company.
Absolutely. And whatever it is you're struggling to find motivation in, start with just one little thing that will get you started. And it you will be pleasantly surprised how fast it will snowball into completion of a task. So if you need to, for example, raise prices this fall, which is typically the time people do it, start with one thing and give yourself a deadline. That's my number one tip when just getting started with something: have a deadline. Because I will procrastinate something to no end, but the moment there's a deadline, get it done.
So, I love it.
All right.
Well, thank you for listening, guys. Make sure to follow us on Instagram. I'm at Jessica406Saunders.
And I'm at Philip Procopio. And hey, while you're out doing things, stop over at Spotify and Apple, wherever you're listening, and give us a rating and review. It helps us a ton. So until next time, stay beautiful and keep hustling.